Good morning. Let's get straight to markets.
Take a look at the impact for the indices.
Factual. Succinct. All you need to know before your trading day starts. Subscribe to our newsletter, CNBC's Daily Open.
Welcome to Beyond the Valley, a CNBC tech podcast with Arjun Karpal and Tom Chitty.
If you commute to work in a city, chances are you spend part of that journey on a train of some sort, travelling through a vast network of tunnels. You may be on one right now. That's because in the last 100 years, much of the infrastructure for city transport has developed underground. But the ways we get around our urban areas may soon change, with innovators looking not just above ground, but up in the sky.
Beyond the Valley.
I'm looking forward to this episode because I don't know where we're at, where the landscape for, you're going to say the word?
eVTOLs. What does that mean?
I don't know. I don't love it.
I don't love the... I'm just generally not a fan of acronyms on the whole.
Who comes up with acronyms? Who's the, you know, who's responsible?
Well, they just put words together and then, you know, whatever letter they start with, they...
Also, nightmare to type out because it's really? Lowercase e for anyone that doesn't know, and then it's capital letters for everything else.
Electric vertical takeoff and landing. Electric vertical, that's the V. Takeoff, T-O. Landing, that's the L. That's eVTOL. That's what it stands for. An eVTOL aircraft. Do you want to hear a fun plane story?
All right.
Before we start this episode.
You've got a few of those. I've heard a lot.
Do you want to hear the funnest one?
Okay.
When I was on holiday recently, I took a plane ride. It was a 12-hour plane ride. And it was a plane ride from hell, is how I describe it. So, you know, we get onto the plane, and there's already an hour and a half delay. And then the pilot over the tannoy says, oh, we've got another 20 minutes delay. We've just found somebody vaping in the bathroom, which, of course, is illegal. So plane hasn't taken off. Three people kicked off the flight. You know, I'm sat with my friends and there's a large group of men, about 20 of them, sort of surrounding us. And they had gotten to the flight quite inebriated and got progressively more inebriated. And they were sort of walking up and down the aisles. There was a fight in between their own group.
Physical fight.
It almost turned physical. Mm. You know, they were squaring up almost. I go to the back of the plane and ask for a bottle of water and a gin and tonic. That was my nightcap. Well, I mean, it's the afternoon, but I was ready for sleep so I could adjust to the time zone to where I was going.
Yep. Got you.
They said, no, we've shut the entire bar for the plane because of this rowdy group of people. Anyways, I get back to my seat. I notice this group of people had opened a duty-free bottle of alcohol. Again, something you're not supposed to do. Bag needs to remain sealed until your destination. So again, progressively more inebriated. Second fight broke out. I'd also learned from the flight attendant that someone had lit up a cigarette in the in the bathroom. Again, illegal. One of their group was headbutting a chair, threw up. Then one of his mates started a fight with one of the flight attendants. Anyways, all settled down eventually. We landed and the pilot announces, oh, we're gonna just stop here for a minute for the regular check from the local authorities. The regular check. Of course there's a regular check. There's not. Nine police came aboard.
Oh, wow.
And there were roughly 13 people taken off that flight.
Essentially being arrested.
They were arrested, yeah. They went peacefully. I mean, you would.
They're probably in a hangover mode.
They were definitely hangover mode. Anyways, that was the start of my vacation. I'd love to hear if listeners have had any kind of experiences like that.
Maybe you were on the flight as well.
Maybe you're listening to this and you were on that flight.
If you do want to tell us your trips from hell, then you can email in at beyondthevalley@cnbc.com. And we'd love to hear them.
Yeah, well, thankfully, these eVTOLs aren't big enough to have a group of 20 people going on a bachelor party.
Before we get into the main topic for today, let's do Arjun's stat of the week.
$35.8 billion.
Okay. Arjun, we've explained the acronym eVTOL stands for, but give us a little bit, a brief overview of what exactly we're talking when we say eVTOL.
So these are electric aircraft, basically, often maybe with space for 2 to 6 passengers. And what they don't take off and land like aeroplanes. They take off and land, as the name suggests, vertically, which obviously is great for space. So very similar to a helicopter, what a helicopter does, though the technology is a bit different. So no runways. And that's effectively what they are. They're passenger aircraft run on electric and designed, I think, for sort of within cities, but also in between cities too. So we're not talking about long distance, you know, 12-hour flights like I took. But it's more shorter distance kind of flights, perhaps in between cities in the same country or even within a city itself.
Well, why not call them flying cars?
I call them flying cars, but, you know, the industry likes to reject such populist terms, I think.
Come up with something a bit more.
They are flying cars. They're flying cars.
These vehicles aren't necessarily actually cars with wheels either, because I know that you've got a program coming out soon,
yeah,
about eVTOLs, and there is one car which is actually a car that turns into a flying car.
So there really is that. There's also that concept. What one of the interesting things, as we'll talk about, and if you watch that episode, you'll see, is there's so many different designs and concepts right now for what one of these vehicles should look like, both from a design point of view, but also from a technology point of view. What kind of system are you using to propel the aircraft? So I think you'll see some of those car designs look like cars. Maybe even in the future, there'll be a sort of hybrid, you know, can drive on the road, wings come out and off it goes situation. But a lot of them now are looking kind of like a hybrid between, you know, a drone as you know it, you know, one of those remote control drones, but on a much larger scale, crossed with a kind of, you know, an aircraft.
There's hundreds of different designs for eVTOLs, but there's four major ones. Take us through them.
Yeah, I think I'll give you a handful of them. Multicopter is one of them, a type of design where you'll see almost like helicopter propellers, but a number of them across the sort of aircraft. So they're great for taking off and landing, much like a helicopter vertically, but they're really not efficient at long distances. So that's one style. You've got the lift and cruise design. This combines this multi-copter approach with more of a sort of traditional aircraft approach. Again, good for the up and down, but also good for longer distances. You've got this what's known as a ducted vector thrust, and one of the companies that uses this kind of system is Lilium, which, you know, I'll talk about, visited their sites a couple of times over the past couple of years. They use multiple individually controlled electric ducted fans that push the vehicle upwards, basically.
Like,
so these fans sort of...
Like a hovering sort,
yep,
of element.
Like a hovering. So great for hovering. They're quieter. They can fly long distances. They can go take off and land vertically. So, I mean, those are some of the sort of... There's many, many more, as you said, kind of technologies. As well, there's the tilt rotor is another one, which has, as the name suggests, these sort of rotors, these almost propellers that are on a tilt to help it kind of go forward and back as well and up and down. So there's all these different systems.
Some of those designs are actually already in use for, I think, military helicopters. I think
the tilt rotor.
There might be some listeners, including myself, who might be thinking, a vehicle, flying vehicle, which takes us short distances, I think there might be one in existence. It's called a helicopter. So why do we need these when we have helicopters already?
I think there's a number of reasons. One, the safety record of helicopters has been called into question a number of times, you know, versus aeroplanes. The fact that they're not electric. And, you know, we're trying to move towards a greener and more sustainable world. So that's another thing in favor of this. Helicopters are noisy, very noisy, versus some of these aircraft. But also the price point of helicopters. They're inaccessible mainly to you and I. You know, we can't just sort of rock up. And the way that a lot of these companies are positioning these sort of eVTOLs is... They'll run a kind of Uber system, almost, a sort of ride-hailing system. Obviously, they're not going to come to your, you know, house, but you'll go to, and we can talk about that, what might be known as a sort of micro airport or a vertiport, you'll go there. But effectively, you could book an app. And the idea is there's going to be a fleet of these run by an operator. And they should generally be quite affordable to run.
But premium still comparative to...
Yeah, so
like your Uber Lux, but maybe a step up from that.
Yeah.
If we were sort of
still slightly
comparing.
Premium, but the price point will look to come down. And it's looking, you know, I mean, we live in London, right? It's and I'm sure many of our listeners live in other cities where traffic's bad. Traffic is bad. Mm. I mean, we're thankful in London to have a very good public transport network, which helps. You know, you can certainly get to a lot of places in the city quicker on a train than you can in a car, that's for sure, or even sometimes walking. But there are many cities where that's not the case. Public transport isn't there, infrastructure isn't there, cars are heavily relied on, the traffic's bad. You know, think about this now. You take that out of the equation, you fly above the traffic. That's another point that is in favour of why people are investing so much in the eVTOL.
When you say investing so much, where are we at when we talk about sort of the market situation and these early stages of this industry?
Millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars have been invested. A lot of VC, venture capital money has gone into these companies. You know, just a few of them. You got Lilium. They're based in Germany. You got Ehang. They're out of China. They've been around for a while as well. Even Airbus, you know, Airbus, the company that makes the big jets, even they're investing in this space. Archer Aviation, the list goes on. There's a number of names, and a lot of the startups have got VC money backing them because they feel this is a big area. Now, let's be honest, it's a bit of a gold rush at this point, and not all these companies are going to survive, have viable business models. Their technology won't win out. But that's, I think, the stage we're at right now. There's a lot of investment going in because of the promise of the technology. And we see that in so many areas, right? Electric vehicles and various other areas. And that's where we're at right now. Infrastructure, non-existent. Doesn't exist.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Yeah. But before we get to that, just on the growth element, 2021 report from Morgan Stanley predicted the market for eVTOLs will be worth $1 trillion by 2040 and $9 trillion by 2050. $9 trillion. I mean,
that's a lot.
That is a lot of money.
Yeah, it's a lot. And the business models, I mean, what makes up that $9 trillion? You've got the companies that are making the aircrafts and selling those. There's that. And then you've got all the bits around that, right? What about the, you know, you have airlines these days, right? You have all the airlines in the world and they buy the planes from Airbus and Boeing, right? I think you'll see a similar model. You have airlines to some extent, whatever they might look like in the future, running these fleets of air mobility vehicles, urban air mobility vehicles, eVTOLs. I think that's how they'll work. So, you know, they'll charge a fee. They'll have to buy the hardware, and then there's all the servicing that comes, all the companies that service, and then, you know, what do these things look like in the future?
Well, exactly. Yeah. I think the designs are still to be determined, or what's the most effective.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about infrastructure.
Yeah.
And I'd also like to talk about regulations, because today, if you wanted to take a helicopter ride over a major city, is going to cost you a lot of money, and you don't see it often because it's very difficult to do and the airspace is limited. So something's drastically going to have to change to accommodate essentially hundreds of these eVTOLs flying around above our heads.
Yeah, there's no infrastructure. You alluded to this feature program we've got coming out looking at the future of these flying cars, basically, and these eVTOLs. As part of that, I went to Munich to visit a company called Lilium. Went to their headquarters. Their production facility is huge. So there's infrastructure there happening. They have this huge multiple hangars where they're testing. And so there's infrastructure in the sense of the company's building the product. That's happening. And actually in 2022, I went to the south of Spain where they had a testing site. So there's some testing sites around the world happening. One of those for Lilium is in the south of Spain. You know, Ehang, which is a Chinese company that makes these passenger drones, they have a testing site in Guangzhou, where I used to live. That was interesting. I visited that as well. I mean, that was before anything was happening in Europe. They were well ahead of the game. They were test flights, all sorts. So that infrastructure is there. The next step is, how do you then go from, yes, you can build them, yes, you can sell them, to how do I get from A to B? And what
where are these things going to land?
What was fascinating about Ehung was they were taking these off into the sky from what was effectively a shopping mall.
Like a car park or above a shopping mall.
It was a small area of a shopping mall. There was a strip of restaurants,
right?
This outdoor area.
Okay.
There was an office, a big office building. And right next door, they were doing test flights. So I think that was great because it showed you actually how little space you need to do it.
These things aren't as big, don't have necessarily the wingspan of a helicopter.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, some of them do.
Yeah.
I think Lilium's was like 14 meters or something.
Okay.
It was huge. But you don't need the runway,
no.
Right? You don't need a massive strip of land for these things to take off. They just go up. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see these, whatever new modern style of helipad, micro airport, vertiport, they call them, effectively, you know, from A to B. So there might be one, let's say you're in London. There might be one, you know, in the center of the city somewhere that takes you to, I don't know, Heathrow Airport or one of the big airports. Or maybe there's one pad here in London and the other one's in another city, say Birmingham, you know, and that might be, you know, point to point, just as you have a train station, point to point. But these things need to be a lot smaller. They're just a little area of land. So the key is going to be what these look like.
Just on the regulation front.
Yeah.
I mean, these companies surely have to sort of have that in the front of their minds.
Oh, yeah.
Because why would they continue pumping all this money in if someone's never going to allow, you know, hundreds of flying vehicles in the air or at any one time? So do we know kind of where we're at, like the early discussions on that?
What's been, I think, really interesting about this area is the regulators have been quite on board with it all.
Really?
Yeah. So I'll go through some of the sort of
major
jurisdictions that are trying to make big movements of this. You know, China, the Civil Aviation Administration of China, they've actually given what they call a type certification to one of Ehang's vehicles. I think it's a two-seater passenger vehicle. So they can actually now carry out, if they want to, commercial operations.
Wow.
Yeah.
Subscribe to the Squawkbox Europe Express podcast. Join Steve, Karen, and myself, Arabile, in unscripted and dynamic debate around the day's top stories with first and exclusive interviews of the best in business and global newsmakers, original points of view and instant analysis of the latest business news and key market themes. Get set for the day ahead. Squawkbox Europe Express podcast, now available on Spotify, Apple Music, and Google Podcasts.
Very interesting, as I said, I was telling you about the shopping center experience, takeoff and landing. So the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, they also have a program for certifications as well. So they've set out clear guidelines. This is what you need for us to feel comfortable to operate these. So in their view, they've got things like the aircraft need to pass a certain number of certifications. The pilots need to be certified too, right? And they believe operations can be at scale at one or more sites by 2028. It's not a long way off. You don't often see regulators sort of give a timeline to kind of say, you know, we want these in operation by then. They're quite forthcoming.
Is that because they're trying to just be the leaders in a new tech industry? Essentially, it's an aerospace industry, but with a lot of tech in
there. Yeah, I think so. I think so, partly to be the leaders, but also the benefits. There's a lot of tech we talk about. Do we need it? You know, but actually, this could be quite game-changing, really, if you think about it. Think about the way we travel. Time cutting down, better for the environment.
I had a conversation once with, I think it was my dad, but anyway, he said, imagine, you know, an alien came from another planet. Yeah. And looked at the way we travel, and they can see us on roads driving in vehicles going really fast right past each other. And, you know, when there's all this space, and they go, you're crazy. Like, why are you limiting yourself to these roads?
Yeah.
And these trails, you know, and rather than just going where you want to go. If you think like that, then it kind of makes sense. And how we have been traveling, maybe it's not the best way for us to get around.
No, I don't think it's not the best way to get around. I mean, using that airspace, from a practical perspective, I would I flew one of these aircrafts myself in virtual reality.
Very good.
Yeah, in virtual reality, very recently. So I was there and I was piloting one of these aircrafts over London. I was like, this is great.
So is it just a joystick?
Yeah, I had my headset on, my virtual reality.
But
headset.
As in, you're...
Yeah, well, like, no, I had like two, like, you know, the...
The up and the
up
forward.
And down, yeah.
Up and down and forward.
Yeah, you know, I'm not like an aerospace expert, but it was up and down.
Yeah.
Forward, go, stop.
Stop, midair.
Hover.
Hover.
Hover, oh, yeah.
Good,
just, just hovering over the River Thames and looking around and spotted the London Eye, Big Ben, flew past CNBC's offices. But that's quite nice. I just land on the roof.
So it was easy to operate?
I'm sure they've simplified it.
Right.
But I think actually also it is, you know, it's pretty simple.
Because that would be my next question is, who's going to fly these? You know, obviously, if they're like a taxi sort of operation, then you're going to get a license. But are you going to need a helicopter license and a pilot's, you know, an airplane
I think there'll be
license?
Special licenses. You know, the U.S. Aviation Administration has already said that there's going to be special pilot licenses.
So unique to the
unique to, yeah. So there's going to be a lot of that. I mean, you know, I don't know how lucrative this is going to be in terms of would, you know, a pilot give up their airline job to fly these? Or could you and I train?
I imagine they'd be super excited that, you know, new forms of employment are opening up because pilots seemingly are losing their jobs. And again, we go on to autonomous aircraft because to me, having a pilot in there seems redundant, particularly as, you know, we move towards a world where planes, commercial planes, it's not unfeasible to think that they could be pilotless.
But the pilots have to be in there right now. I think that, you know, the pilotless is, when I was speaking to the CEO of Lilium on that trip, I said, you know, what about autonomy? He's like, nah, not right now. Not right now. We need to get these in the sky. We need to prove they're safe. We need to prove the viability of them to the public. Autonomy is down the line. It can be done, but he goes, not right off the bat. So I think autonomy is going to be a I mean, it's the same thing as autonomous cars, right? We're looking at them now. We've been talking about them for ages, but we're no closer to having them out on a mass scale. Well, in China they are, but we're no closer to really having them out on a mass scale because...
Well, we've had some incidents.
Yeah. And while the tech's there, it's that the regulators need to be, this needs to be watertight. Even these with the pilots need to be watertight.
Well, that, I mean, the safety element is got to be, is going to be paramount. When we talk about aircraft safety, in commercial aircraft, the safety protocols checks are extensive. Hence why it's very rare to have an accident on a commercial aircraft, very rare. Private aircraft, slightly more risky, but still, there's safety checks. But these are happening. You know, that's also why, you know, it costs so much, because there's so many people involved in checking every time a plane lands, going over the plane, checking all the settings, checking that, you know, everything's in working order. And if eVTOLs are several flights a day, are we going to have those safety checks happening? And that, again, is going to ramp up the cost because you're going to need people to do that. You know, these things are going to need to be on the ground to be then rechecked.
There's a lot. Yeah, there's all those practical considerations, I think, that aren't necessarily being spoken about right now. I think maybe there'll be less safety checks than aeroplanes. I'm not sure. You know, large jets have so many different parts to them, right? These almost feel... Or at least they're being marketed as you kind of step in, off you go, you know, pretty easy.
Because, you know, you talk about cars, right?
If
you have an engine failure in a car, you pull it over to the side of the road. If you have an engine failure in an eVTOL, it's going to be slightly more
and
serious.
That's why some of these models are talking about individually controlled fans or propellers.
So that if one fails...
Yeah, they use this term redundancy. So if one fails, you've got backups, and it would take a lot of them to fail to bring the aircraft down. And so there's all of those. I mean, the other thing is this is one giant computer, basically, flying in the sky. So there does bring that element of risk into it, you know, if computers can fail. But then on the flip side, they can also be monitored remotely. And so there's all of that too, you know, to the safety element is just going to be so key. And will the public go on it?
Well, that you're leading into beautiful.
Well, I'm asking you. Yeah, would you go on it?
Well, I think I would. Obviously, at a price that was felt right, but right now it feels like it would be still the preserve of the uber wealthy. So if it became something like that we have a ferry that goes down the River Thames, yeah. Uber Clipper. It's more expensive. It's probably the most expensive public transport you can take. Yeah. But you take it once in a while, and yeah. It's a nice experience. But it's not outrageous.
You know what?
That's where I sort of see it.
Yeah, I praised London transport earlier because I think it is very good.
Mm, agreed.
The transport around the rest of the country, however, is lacking. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's so expensive to get a train in the UK. I wonder, given that, how much the cost of say I wanted to go from, London to another city, to maybe Birmingham, to Manchester, which actually some of these eVTOLs can do that distance. And that makes sense, right? Because it could be quicker. And you just kind of sit in this aircraft for a short amount of time and you're there rather than sort of going in to like a train station and then, getting on a train and going all that way. Those journeys these days are really expensive. So I wonder how much sort of an eVTOL would cost in comparison, because it could bring some competition to the train operators. Because if their pricing, if the train operators are already so expensive and these eVTOL operators are going to be pricing, on the premium end, but maybe that looks very similar to a train ticket, you'd opt for the eVTOL maybe.
But that may be where it's most effective and most practical as well. Yeah. Because actually, if you think about going to a location within the city to then go to another location, but you've got to get to the vertiport, get on the you're waiting for a few other people to get into your eVTOL and then land and the checks and whatnot. Actually, it might be quicker just to take the tube.
Yeah.
But your to your point, actually, between cities, those are the journeys which, it could be much more practical.
I can't imagine the point of them flying around a city like London, for example, or even some of the other European cities where there's public transport networks in place. I can't see the point of it. Whilst I was in virtual reality flying over London, I was thinking, realistically, there's tall buildings here, there's tall monuments. How are you going to operate something like this at scale across this airspace? Whilst London is like a sprawling, and large city, it's still quite tight. It's still quite packed, even up in the skies. There's a lot more skyscrapers going up these days. So I'd be interested to see whether in the future, what takes off, is the use really about that longer distance that currently we might drive to over 200 to 400 miles, or take a train, or is it actually within cities? And I feel like for me, what makes most sense now, and I guess it's going to depend country by country as well on their infrastructure, but for me in the UK, for sure, it's about those city to city journeys.
I know that one analyst called it the mother of all aerospace bubbles.
Yeah.
Which I think you'll quote on the program. Is that a rare dissenting voice in this, or are there a lot of people questioning the viability of this?
I think the mother of all aerospace bubbles, I think, is true in the sense that there's a lot of companies doing this. A lot. And as I mentioned earlier, not all are going to survive. There will be collapses. There will be consolidation. There will be just failures. Companies that just don't quite make it, who have maybe raised millions of dollars of money. That is where we're at right now. But that happens all the time with these cycles, right? We've seen it already in electric vehicles. Every company trying to raise money and some have already collapsed, not quite made it. We see it in AI right now. Bubbles forming, companies raising money. But that's what happens with tech cycles. When there's some hype around a technology, you often see it. See a lot of money invested, venture capitalists and others betting on who's going to win out. But it would be very difficult for all of these companies to survive that have raised money. And so there will be collapses in that sense. But in terms of as we think through the technology and as we think through the use, I feel like during this discussion, it's become clear that, there will be a market for it, but that just needs to be figured out. And there's so many hurdles here. And I know we're talking about certifications being handed out and companies doing test flights and everything. But one issue with this, with any aircraft, right, this thing could get grounded to a halt. And then secondly, you know, it's public acceptance, isn't it? It's, would you get on one? Would you feel safe getting on one? Even if, you know, you've got all the safety checks and stuff, are you going to be an early adopter? Are you not? Are you going to wait a few years, see how this pans out? There's all of those questions as well. The price point, is this going to be reserved for the super wealthy? All of those things. So I think just to, yeah, rightfully throw some sort of balance and skepticism around the growth of eVTOLs, there were a lot of limiting factors and potentials that I see that could pop up at any moment. That could, you know, really slow down the growth of the industry. And so whilst it's very exciting, whilst it would be cool to have, I think there's a lot of things that need to be worked out, one from infrastructure to safety to regulation to then public acceptance and people saying, you know what, I feel safe enough to jump on one.
Before we finish, just wanted to flag the history of flying cars, or, you know, the 1940s, 1950s, I thought was sort of amazing that the US had their own secret program trying to develop these. It looked like a flying saucer, so I'm sure the conspiracy theorists were loving that. And also, we can't finish this episode about flying cars or eVTOLs without talking about Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, the OG.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, a close affinity with Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
That's your nickname, isn't it?
It was for a time.
For a time.
I'll try and bring that back, actually.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
It's a nice musical, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a classic. Yeah. Before we finish the episode, we have, of course, got to do Stat of the Week, which is...
$35.8 billion US dollars, Tom.
$35.8 billion. Yeah. The market value of eVTOLs in 2030.
Close, 2032. We've got it. The eVTOL market size, 2032.
Well, actually, you're
right.
Year.
Yeah, I know. So random. You're right, though. You're right. We're gonna. I'm going to give you a point for that.
That's, a half mark.
Yeah, no, just take the full credit. You basically got it.
Okay, I've got a stat of the week for you.
Okay.
How much money do you think it costs to take the 15-minute journey in a helicopter, private helicopter, from Battersea in central London to Heathrow Airport?
Central London. In pounds.
In pounds.
In pounds.
Yes.
We'll have to figure out a conversion.
To hire a 6-seater helicopter.
A 6-seater helicopter? That's like a military helicopter, isn't it? Wow. 6-seater helicopter, Battersea to Heathrow, £350.
£2,000.
No.
Just over £2,000.
No.
Yes.
That is
14
wild.
Miles. There you go.
Wow.
But you wouldn't have
That's almost the same price as the underground here. No. I joke. I guess that was clearly a joke. That's very surprising.
Well, I've really enjoyed that. And I'm sure our listeners have. And if you have any questions on eVTOLs or you just want to give your opinions on this burgeoning industry, then please email us at beyondthevalley@cnbc.com. Thank you, Arjun.
Thank you, Tom.
We'll be back next week for another episode of Beyond the Valley. Goodbye.
Beyond the Valley.